everybody. It's your new favorite podcast host, Bonnie Somerville, and this is Second Act. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm so excited that you are still here with me, and I know you're all leaving me those amazing reviews, and you're actually pressing 5 stars as we speak. You're just like hitting it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, do it again, tell your mom to do it, why not? I'm so happy to be here. This has been an amazing ride for me so far, and also some of you have written me and left me messages and asked me questions already. I love that. So before I forget, you can follow me on @secondact_pod on Instagram and message me there any questions you have. You can also follow me on my Instagram, which is Bonz Somerville, like the Fonz, but with a B. And follow me on Twitter, secondactpod, and ask me questions because I love hearing from you. And also don't forget, tell all your friends to subscribe wherever they get their podcasts. Please continue to send me messages. I've gotten some really kind ones, and it inspires me a lot and helps me a lot. And I'm happy that I'm inspiring some of you guys with your second acts and what you're going through in life. And feel free to send me questions and messages, whatever you want. I love to hear from you. This next guy, I don't even know how long I need to introduce because it's a long one. It's super funny. I'm really proud of it. We talk about everything. It's really awesome if you don't know how the business works, if you don't know how to, you know, sell a show, if you don't know how actors get started, if you don't know how it used to be back in the day in the dinosaur era when we were all starting out. It's really good for that. This guy's an amazing stand-up comedian, writer, producer. He's a dear friend of mine. And we met a long, long time ago, right after I'd gotten off this little show. You know, that little show, Friends. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's like a show about this. Pals. They could have called it Pals. I don't know. They picked Friends. Yeah, there were like 6 of them. I don't know, 3 girls, 3 guys. Anyway, if you haven't heard about it, you should look it up. It's kind of a big deal. So after that, I got my first sitcom where I was actually one of the leads. It was called The In-Laws. And you'll hear all about that. And this guy's just awesome. He's hysterically funny. He's a dear friend. He taught me a lot about the business. There's going to be a lot of talking, a lot of laughing, a lot of talking over each other. These are two people that ain't shy. We like to talk. So I cannot wait for you to hear this interview with my dear friend, Ilan Gold. Everybody, I'm very thrilled. Very, very thrilled to introduce my one, my only, my favorite, Shabbat Shalom, TV husband, Ilan Gold, everybody.
I already, you're starting this podcast off dishonest. I'm not your only one. You've had others.
I don't count them.
Oh, really? Ross wasn't one of your, well, you didn't get married.
I didn't get married. No, listen, just like in real life, always a girlfriend, never a wife.
Can we quickly act out? I'll be Ross, you be Mona. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. You're over me? When were you under me?
What do you think? I mean, maybe we should do a Christmas card together. I mean, what do you think? You think it's too soon?
Wow. How do you do that? How do you age your voice down 25 years?
I just have to go higher because my voice now is like, I sound like I basically I'm Elliot Gould at this point.
For the record, I have had several TV and movie wives, and you are hands down my favorite. And as I said on my roast, I was roasted recently, and you were, I'm to this day getting accolades. You know who was the best? And I'm thinking, Russell Peters, Jay Leno, Tom Arnold, Bonnie Somerville.
No way. You're making that up.
I swear I'm getting it to this day. And my favorite opening joke was about you when I said, Bonnie Somerville is here, my TV wife. And you know, Bonnie is my TV wife and actually a lot like my real wife, except I fuck Bonnie.
Wait, explain to the audience, yes. Because we're jumping
how
right
I
in.
How I fuck you?
Yeah. Well, no, it's the Sabbath. It's the Sabbath thing. You know,
it's almost the Sabbath. Okay, by the way, look at me dropping F-bombs. I have holy Jewish books behind me.
So and for people that don't know, Ilan is Orthodox. He's a modern, very hot, sexy, modern Orthodox comedian, but he goes into the Batcave at sundown. So we gotta, you know, we have to make sure we get every point because soon he'll turn into a
Jewish vampire. You know, the clock, the sun is setting, the clock is ticking. But let me tell you something. I recommend to everyone out there, take 25 hours a day and put your damn phones down. I promise you right now, if anybody came down and said, hey, by the way, the Judaism thing, it's all baloney, I would still go, can we keep the Sabbath? Can I have dinner with my teenage kids without them staring at TikToks?
Can I talk about TikToks? My future stepdaughter, I've never seen the TikTok.
Future?
But wait, let me ask.
Are there wedding bells?
Yes. Wait, let me ask you a question. I'm running this interview, not you.
Okay, you can't. This is the problem with this. This is the problem with this podcast right now. The two of us are addicted to talking. We can't not talk.
We also love each other, and we have a lot of stories. But wait, before you go on.
That's me, you, and Jeff Goldblum.
Wait, for the audience, so you don't see this, I walked into Elon's office at his roast, and I said to my boyfriend, oh, and who's this and who's that? And I always assume the worst. Oh, nobody remembers me, blah, blah. And next to Elon's desk is a photo of me and Elon and Jeff Goldblum from when we had our show, which we're going to get back to, where we met.
Yes.
At the Mercer Hotel.
Yes.
When we were killing it and we had just been picked up by NBC and we were like, we're about to get rich.
Yeah, baby. And I took that photo out 42 minutes before you showed up.
Okay, listen, can I go back really quick before you move on about the Orthodox and the joke about the Sabbath? I tell everybody this, and I told this to Dave when we were on our way to your roast. Mm-hmm. Not only have I always admired you for doing that, and also like not you have such strong values about family and work ethic, and you won't work on Fridays, and I know you've turned down jobs.
Yes.
I know you've made choices. I have always admired that so much just because, forget the religion thing, to put everything away, literally, for 24 hours and sit with your loved ones, I think it's the most brilliant, genius idea. And if we don't need, we need it now more than ever.
It's beautiful. And for the record, we don't just sit there. You could literally have people over. You can go to other people's homes.
Well, you do it. You do it. You don't do it like the way I grew up in Flatbush when the Orthodox would knock on our door and go, could you turn our lights on for us?
Oh, yes. The Shabbos Goy.
I was the Shabbos Goy. But no, you do this for so long. And the first time I went to your dinners when we met, I was like, the family thing, the toast to the wife, the friends, the wine, the happiness.
Well, just think about how it's the only night of the week where I'm not going to run to a comedy club. My daughter's not going to run to her boyfriend. They're not going to go to Xbox and whatever. It is that time. By the way, it's tonight. And you're right. The wine, it's exciting.
It's the best. I told Dave, I cannot wait for him because he's never been to one to come to your house. I have memories of when we first met of going to your house in your tiny apartment when you only had one kid.
Right.
Some of the best nights of my life were just sitting around. It's like Thanksgiving with prayers and tons of wine.
Yes, people say that. Everyone that comes to visit, they say, wow, so we do this twice a year, Christmas and Thanksgiving. You do it every Friday night? Like,
Friday.
It's Thanksgiving every weekend it here, is. Bitches.
It is, and people get to sit. Honestly, it's a beautiful thing. But wait.
Thank you.
I'm going to rewind, and I want to tell everybody, first off, how we know each other, starting from the beginning.
Don't forget to tell the parking lot story.
Oh, no, you're going to tell that story. I know Elon Gold, my very first sitcom that I had gotten after Friends, where I was a lead. I booked a sitcom that Elon wrote and produced called The In-Laws. And Elon, tell everybody what that was.
First of all, wrote is a bit of a stretch. I take no credit for the writing of that terrible show. What happened was, here's the thing. And this is what I love about this show, that it's all about, you know, second act.
Yes, right? And you have a million, so we have to start somewhere, so go.
And by the way, I do have a million, and I doubt that you'll ever have one guest that will say, I've had only a second act. There is no way, you can't live life with one second act. I appreciate the title and the theme, but it's really, you're constantly reinventing, you're constantly adapting. Look at this pandemic. Everyone had to adapt, and my first thought when the pandemic hit was like, oh my God, I can't wait to sit back and watch Breaking Bad. And I still haven't, you know, seen.
Second act is just a metaphor. I mean, it's a title, but yes, my point was to interview people like you and me and doctors, lawyers, divorce, more, you know, whatever it is. How many times in life do you reinvent yourself or you'll just get old and die and quit? But wait, tell everybody about The In-Laws. That's how we met.
Well, we
met. Tell them what it was.
So I was doing stand up for a while, and I was living with my in-laws at the time, because despite what they will tell you, Jews don't have all the money. In fact, I had almost none of the money, and I want to meet these Jews that have it all. I had almost none of the money. I must have skipped the important meeting where they handed it out, and I was just doing stand up and literally living with my in-laws because I couldn't afford whatever. And my manager, the great Willie Mercer, I'm like just bitching and moaning to him about the hell that is my father-in-law and just not having independence and freedom and being under their roof. And he was like, you should be talking about this in your act. I can sell this as a TV show. And I was like, really? It's not really organic to my act. It's not what I talk about in my act, but I guess I can, you know, fabricate a few comedy bits about living with the in-laws, which I did. And you have to understand, this is a time where comedians were given sitcoms at LAX. When you landed at the airport, before you got your luggage, you got a sitcom deal. Here, you want a development deal? I'm actually just trying to get my luggage. No, trust me, you
want
it.
And this is around 90, this is like 2004-5.
Right, and all through the late 90s and that period, if you did the Montreal Comedy Festival, which I did, you know, almost every year for 10 years leading up to that, the second the industry, the town, the showbiz folks heard that you were booked to do the Montreal Festival, before they saw your act, before they saw whether or not you were fun, oh, he's doing the festival, we should give him a deal.
Yeah, and a development deal.
Yes.
Wait, for all our listeners that are civilians, and I quote, explain back in the day when you and I were lucky starting out, what the golden ticket, what was a development deal? Because I had two and it was the golden ticket. Explain what that is.
It is the golden ticket. They used to give it out to actors who they loved like you and thought that we should hold on to her because someone else will take her. And if we pay her to not go anywhere else, we can just plop her in shows.
So we're going to pay you enough money to not take any job for a year or two.
And it could literally be $100,000, which is a staggering amount of money, or $500,000.
Especially in 2000, 2005. That was that was
crazy talk.
Crazy talk. So that's back in the day.
So comedians, they would give these deals to, and it was like, if you had 5 good minutes, they would give you a sitcom development deal. They would give, for 5 good minutes, you could have $500,000.
Because sitcoms were huge back then.
Huge back then.
So we're
coming off of the Tim Allen, Giant Home Improvement, and Roseanne.
And Seinfeld.
And it's like, okay, they saw comedians on TV are working. Let's just throw money at comedians. But it's throwing shit against the wall. It's literally like they were throwing it at everybody.
And remember, guys, this was before cable. This was before social media. This was before, I mean, it was barely internet. I didn't even have an email account when I met you, Ilan. I got one after. This was back when comedy was, if you had a sitcom, that was it. You were the most famous person on earth.
That's 100% true. And also, no one can relate to this under like 40, but this was at a time when it meant something to be on TV. You couldn't just YouTube broadcast yourself. It was like, if you wanted to be on a screen, you had to have a studio or a network go, we want you to be on a screen.
Speaking of which, you had to audition like I did for your show 5, 6, 7, 8 times. I auditioned for your show, I think it was like, and they would do the rounds, remember?
Yeah.
They would cut, you know, cut, and you'd wait in the hall, and you'd wait in the car and go, okay, you made it to the next round. You made it to the next round. Now, these kids today,
yeah.
You're getting offers from your Instagram.
Right, and that's the thing about Instagram. Like now, in this pandemic, I went, hey, instead of waiting for a network to give me a show, I'm going to give myself
one. I want to talk about that, but I just
that's on my list. That's a ninth act. Okay, so back to the show. And let me just say this about comedians getting sitcoms. We all got completely full of ourselves. We all started thinking in the clubs. I was in New York working out there every night at all the different clubs, the Comedy Cellar, Stand Up New York, Comic Strip. We all thought we were TV stars the second you got a development deal. And the truth is, there were like hundreds of deals, and like maybe one, like, you know, whatever would break, Ray Romano would break out and turn into everybody else. I'll never forget a comedian came over to me. I won't even say his name. And you may not even know him. You may know him. But he's actually a good comedian. But
why did I date him? You don't want to say?
You dated all of us, didn't you, at one point?
Dave, my boyfriend's in the room, so let's just...
I'm joking. I'm joking. These are jokes, folks.
Oh, my boyfriend just went, I know. Sorry, producer. Okay, go on.
He comes over to me and he goes, hey, man, I was thinking, you know, for my show, you could play my brother. And I was like, you don't have a show. You have a check. The only thing written is not the pilot script, is a check. What are you promising me, roles? And by the way, he just had a check. Never had a pilot, never had a script, never had a show.
And you know what? You know what a check means now to your daughter's age? What does a check mean?
Oh, my God.
Do you have a blue check? Do you have a blue check on your name?
That's right. That's so
funny. By the way, I just gave you that joke. I'll let you have that for your next
time. It's okay, because I already had it. In fact, here right now, I can't show you a dresser thing. But it's a Frasier residual for 2 cents. Oh. And I already did this. If you want to get into show business, kids, it's 2 cents. And I already said, this is a check that is worthless. A blue check on Instagram is worth more than this. Anyway, the point is.
Listen, wait a second. Go back to in-laws, please. I got to start.
Okay, so my manager says, do this, talk about this. I go, I do it. I talk about it on stage. I get 5 minutes together. We go to Montreal. The networks and studios are watching and they're like, we got to give this guy a show. He has 5 minutes. So I of course, accept the deal. We get Kelsey Grammer, who is at that time
Frasier
himself, speaking of my 2 cent residual, and literally
he wants to exec produce it.
He wants to exec produce. He wants to. Didn't he direct the pilot too? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he directed the pilot. And so now I'm going into NBC, the president of NBC, Jeff Zucker, who is now the president of CNN. I'm going in with Frasier.
Like you were 30 years old. I remember you were 30.
I was 30 years old.
I was 27 when I got the pilot. Yeah, you were 30.
Right, and I'm sitting there with Frasier himself, and the. Should we even say his name?
No. Don't go off topic. But at this point, just so the audience knows, how long had you been in LA full time at this point when you got this deal for the show In-Laws that I did?
I was back and forth constantly.
Okay, go on.
So it was before I had kids, so we could just go back and forth whenever we wanted. And then I'd come in for pilot season, and then I'd go back to New York and try to do stand-up. Anyway, so then we're sitting there pitching this. Jeff Zucker's not even listening. He's literally sitting, like, with his arm around his own couch, looking back at the 5 screens, going, what are they doing over there on ABC?
Don't you love that, when they don't listen?
And because Frasier's sitting there, he's like, yeah, okay, so let's do this. And I'm like, he wasn't even listening. He doesn't even know what the show is. Like, yeah, me living with me. It's kind of like Meet the Parents, but like TV version, and my father-in-law and I don't get along, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we'll do it. Anyway, cut to, we get the first person, before we got you, before we got the lovely Bonnie Somerville, we got Dennis Farina.
God rest his soul.
I mean, we could go on about this whole podcast could be about Dennis.
Literally, Farina. That guy changed my life. Also taught me so much. But yes, you got Dennis Farina.
Just a legend. And he and I just had the most phenomenal rapport.
You really did. I was so jealous of the two of you. You were so besties.
And he called me Goldie from day one. Gene Smart and you and him were all surrounding me going, so how do we pronounce your name? Is it Elon? Is it Elon? Elon? Is it Alon? And he goes, you're Goldie, because I'm not messing with that Elon crap.
He'd come out with his wad of cash.
Wad of cash.
Like mobster wad of cash. Not that he was in the mob. Not that he was in the mob.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I'm not saying you're an accountant. If I was your accountant.
I'm not saying I'm your accountant. If I were your accountant, that's Charles Grodin.
Midnight Run.
And then he played, is this Tommy? I'm going to take a pencil. I'm going to stick it right in your eye. Is this moron number one? Put moron number two on the phone. That's Dennis Farina.
If you haven't seen Midnight Run,
stop listening to this podcast and just go put it on. You'll be much happier.
If you want to be an actor and you haven't seen Midnight Run, give up. But yes, he used to come up to you and go, Goldie, hey, come here.
Come here, Goldie. And one time he said to me, we took a trip to New York, and he said, you know what, Goldie? I was walking around Central Park, and I thought to myself, I said, I got some money in my pocket. I got my health, and I'm 3,000 miles away from Goldie. Nothing could be better. Anyway, so then we get Dennis Farina, we get him, and that's like, oh my God, this is a guy. And again, this is a different time.
Everybody, remember, this is Elon's first show that he sells, and it's about his life. So just take that into consideration, okay? Okay, go.
Little asterisk to that, it's probably the third show that I sold, because again, they were just giving out deals, but nothing that ever aired, whatever. I did one.
Okay, sorry.
It's not important. So the point is, so we get him, again, this is a time when movie stars didn't do TV.
No, they did not do TV when we started. You were, if you did TV.
Right. Julia Roberts has a TV show right now.
Remember, yeah, I was told you can't do, even when I was a singer first, they were like, you know, if you sing, you can't act. Or, you know what I mean? Models don't. We had so many rules. So go on. You get Dennis Green.
I turned down hosting Talk Soup because I thought they were, I was told, if you're a host, you're not an actor. You're not an actor. You're not going to get part. It's unbelievable because now you can do anything.
Anything. I told Dave the other day, what's his name? What's his name?
Bob, Steve,
no,
Dan,
all right. Matt McConaughey.
Matt McConaughey.
The year that he won the Oscar, he won the Emmy for True Detective. He won the Oscar, and he had a Lincoln commercial running, and it was like that was it. That was it.
Right.
Walls. Nobody cares.
A commercial. You were dead.
Oh, dead. Forget it. And if you did a soap, you were dead.
So we get Dennis. Then let's talk about how we get you. Because now we've got to get the fabulous, beautiful Shiksa wife, who's also funny, who can also hit a punchline like Bonnie Somerville can. Because let me tell you something. That's not easy. It is not easy to hit punchlines when you're not looking at an audience and you're really just interacting with another actor and the audience is there and there's 300 people over there. You're not looking at them like stand up. You're right in their face so they're going to laugh back at you. You're looking at the actor. They're laughing over there and you would nail every line and every joke that we did. But let's talk about your audition.
I learned a lot from you and we'll talk about what Gene Smart, one of my heroes goodness. Taught me about comedy. But yes, so this is, guys, so you know, this is where I met Elon.
Right.
I go in for this pilot. It had a lot of heat. I had just come off Friends, so I had some heat, Mona, right? It was for NBC. Yeah. It was really, really, really hot in the business, they say. Like, this was a pilot people wanted, right?
Yes.
I read it, loved it, laughed out loud. Oh, by the way, guys, side note, this is back when we used to get our scripts. Remember the night before on the doorstep?
Oh my God.
Oh God. And I'd go, I would miss
script on the doorstep.
On the doorstep, and a PA would knock.
Yeah.
And they'd go, hey, Bonnie, here's the notes. We changed some pages. And we would go, and I'd wait for that script on the doorstep.
Right. Now it's like Amazon or the box of dumbbells or whatever.
But anyway, I got the script, loved it, wanted it. Absolutely loved it, guys. Just so you know, I still have it. I have it saved. Like, it was so freaking good.
Thank you.
But, I went in. I didn't meet you first. I had like a few rounds because I still was not that known. And then I finally met you like at the time when they wanted to maybe test me, which
we had a chemistry test.
Oh, chemistry test.
We had a chemistry test. And Bonnie and I had the best. I'm doing like Trump now. Yeah. I know a lot of actresses. Bonnie, the best chemistry. I've had a lot of chemistry with a lot of women.
Millions and millions of women. But we did. We had a chemistry test, guys. That's what they do. They still call it that. And I loved you. And then I remember.
And I you.
I remember there were like three or four girls up for it. I went back again. And then I just remember there was one time I went in, and this is a true story. I was so nervous. You were so good to me. You came outside. You weren't.
Who goes outside?
Nobody. You were nice to the other girls, but you literally pulled me aside discreetly and you were like, listen, I love you, and you like gave me a couple of like notes of like, but this is what I'm trying. This is what they want or we want.
This is what they want, right?
And you gave me, and you literally gave me, in case people don't know about acting, sometimes what the producers want is not maybe what the comedian or the writer wants, but the comedian or the writer just wants you to get the job.
Right.
So they go, just do it this way.
Rooting for you.
You did. You go, this is what they're
actors doing. Don't realize that the only person more desperate in that room than the actor is the network and studio and producers that want the perfect person for this role. So we're all nervous. They're nervous going, we don't cast this perfectly, we lose $1 billion.
And also, who else is more nervous? The casting directors, because they are so sick and tired of getting their ass every day kicked, going, why did you send us this? She wasn't funny. And they're literally going, please, please. But you came outside. gave me some notes. I went inside. I remember Frasier, Kelsey was there. Everybody was there. I killed it. It was like the first time. Cause Friends, you know, it was great, but I wasn't anybody. You know what I mean? And I just remember walking out and I walked out of that room and I remember 28 years old. And I was like, I think I just fucking got the lead in the sitcom.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
And
you did.
Thanks to you. And I got to work with you.
I remember getting picked up 13 episodes. Again, this was a big deal. Primetime, must-see TV. Remember must-see TV? You know, before that show, I actually pitched another show with Brandon Tartikoff.
No, God.
Yes, the late, great legend.
Brandon Tartikoff.
Yes. And read The Last Great Ride if you want to know what network television was like before whatever it fell apart.
Read that book if you want to know.
Brandon became like an independent producer at his own company. We went in to pitch to Les Moonves. This was back in the day. Right now, he's much less Moonves, right? This was when he was more Moonves. Now he's barely Moonves. But, you know, and by the way, that's the other great thing about longevity in show business. You, the talent, will either outlive, like all the executives will either die, get Me Too'd, fired.
Now
right?
They will. How about how about all the other poor people that they never got caught? Now forget it.
Yeah, forget it. And you know what? Talent, true talent, rises. And if you have tenacity and you have perseverance, forget about those executives. I had people at Comedy Central who like never hired me, and it's always regime changes. The first regime, when I started doing stand-up, they were like, we love Elon. They literally put me in a pipeline into the future of comedy with Dave Chappelle and Jim Brewer and all these great comedians. They're like, he is the future. Then that regime went away.
And then you're nothing.
The new regime was like, we don't like Elon. We hate Elon.
Well, okay, wait, let me interrupt you. Let me interrupt you. That goes with the theme of Second Act. You just pointed out something that I always say. That is an experience that people don't realize. You could be here. Maybe it's not you. Maybe they change producers. They change regime. And then all of a sudden, you literally are back in the room again, like I am, I'm 46 years old, auditioning for people that I worked for 15 years ago, reminding them that I'm funny. And you're going, I can't. And it's not about you, but it's literally, you have to start over because it's a whole new regime change.
Yes, always. It's always new. And it's always, you can't even get caught up in that and who's the executive. You just have to do great work. You always have to try to do your best work. That's the key to everything.
I don't know how you say ad break in Hebrew, but that's what we're doing. We'll be right back. Hey guys, so this is a quick ad break. Before I do that, I just want to say, I've been doing this for 25 years? I have auditioned for so many voiceovers, I have never booked one, okay? Talking about Second Act, not one. I had to make my own podcast to do a voiceover. So here it is. Summer's over, fall is here. I know, can't believe it. And you've probably been locked up with your significant other for 7, 8 months now? I can't even keep count. You still want to look good. With Plexiderm, all you need is 10 minutes, and you can look 10 years younger. Who doesn't want to look 10 years younger? It visibly reduces wrinkles, lines, and even eye bags, and results last for hours. So you can try a 6-application trial pack for $14.95 with free shipping when you visit triplexiderm.com. Use the code BELIEVE. Again, that's triplexiderm.com. Use the code BELIEVE. BLEAV at checkout. You know what? Make those wrinkles and lines and bags disappear because nobody wants to see that. Wait, so how about, let me ask you a question. So when In-Laws was amazing, we became friends, best friends, I love you. And then it got canceled and it was devastating. What was that like for you?
I'll never forget Mark Reisman coming into the room and calling us all together and going, well, I have a bit of bad news. And then he tells us, I'm like, a bit of bad news. Are you kidding me? This was my ticket. And it was more than I'm going to be rich and famous. It was like, I was doing something I loved with people I loved. I loved you.
We were family.
Madly in love with Dennis.
And Gene Smart.
We would all go out to dinner like after every taping, and
I had your son's 2-year-old birthday at my rental house, the first house I could afford to rent
you
in the hills.
You christened my other son, and we're not even Catholic. Here's what people always think about castes. They all get along. They're all pals. And it's the opposite. Except us. We were the exception.
That was a setup for disappointment for me after that got canceled. And also, working with the great Jean Smart, you know, growing up with designing women.
Yes.
I mean, she would pull me aside, give me, you know, helped me. Told me to speak
By the way, I cried to Dennis saying the worst thing is that I'm going to miss you.
Yeah,
he was like, we'll always hang out. We'll have dinner, you know. But oh my God, it was depressing.
But also, it was your life. This was your baby. And so.
And then there's that. So here's the thing. It was sort of my, baby that was kidnapped.
I don't want to. Yes.
We don't want to get into it. But the point is, I had this idea that.
Got hijacked.
It wasn't my life story. It wasn't my passion
project. Dave, you know, my boyfriend / producer just crawled under the desk to get a Diet Coke. And I was like, you know, you could walk, like, we're not on a movie set. Anyway,
we're not on camera. You could walk past us. Plus, we want to see your pretty face, Dave.
Yeah, it was a pretty face. Let's see it. You got a pretty face. Say hi, Dave.
There he is. Look at that handsome kid. Oh, and look at those biceps.
I know.
And that tush.
Oh, the tush is good.
Yes.
But okay, so you were crying. I was crying.
So anyway, So the hijacking of my quote show is that I had just, you know, an idea that my manager basically pitched to me. This wasn't really my life story. It was my life at the time story. Right. At the time I was living with my in-laws. So it wasn't the dream, the passion project. I wasn't as attached to it as you would think. It was just for me a really cool, amazing TV gig. And when the showrunner sort of took it and said, okay, this is a great idea. I'm going to write it. You're not going to be in the writer's room ever. And I was like, what? I'm a comedian. I write my own joke. He goes, no. Comedians write. They don't get. He goes, Kelsey's not in the room at Frasier. I'm like, yeah, but he's an actor. I'm a comedian and a writer. I should be in the room to lend my voice. Any show that works, you know, from Seinfeld to Romano to Roseanne, the comedian is in the room and lending their voice and writing with them. So the minute he went, no, you're an actor on this, you're out of the room, I went, okay, this is trouble.
How hard is that? How hard is that for you, to, especially a comedian? How hard is that to actually be quiet? Like, how hard? I mean, it's impossible for me to be quiet.
Impossible, Bonnie. I still think I'm interviewing you.
Yeah.
It was so difficult because I was just like, so, okay, I'll just be an actor on this. I'll be an actor.
And
that's
you had
fine.
To see jokes. And I remember being around you. I remember being with you. And you were so good to me. And I would call you in tears. And it was my first leading role. And I wanted to be good. And I'd be like, Elon, I don't think this is funny. And you were so good to me. And you'd be like, Bonnie, I think you think I have more power than I do. And you would be so kind to me. And I'm calling you at like 2 a.m. And you're going, I agree with you. But you had no say, and that has to be somebody who is as brilliant as you. That has to be hard.
It's hard. Not because I'm brilliant, which again, we both can agree to agree on that one. It's because it was just frustrating to lose not power or control, but any say, any creative input. Input. Give me some input. Anyway, so.
Wait, if you ended up just being an actor on it, do you think that made it easier for you that it was canceled because they turned you into an actor, not a comedian? Did that kind of take the sting off?
Totally. That and because, I wasn't involved in it creatively. It wasn't my words, my writing. It wasn't my heart, my soul. It was just a really cool acting gig, which is upsetting because I fell in love with the other actors. That being said, look, here's what I realized.
I think what's painful is the thing of the, sorry to interrupt you, but what could have been is always the painful. Like, this could have been
showrunner and the right room,
and people that are like
you. We had the right cast.
We did, but people like you that I've worked with, I have been lucky. Some people like you that are open to, and I am just an actress.
Right.
People like you, I could pitch you jokes and you're like, that's brilliant. those are the people that you want to work with. That's lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, you had great ideas. No, but hey, you guess need what? To work with You're people. Just an actor. And guess what? Some actors have brilliant jokes coming out of them.
Elon, you know how few people have the ego. How few people have the ego.
Actors, writers, like we should be against each other and not collaborate.
That's what kills me the most is what could have been in so many situations like the in-laws.
Could have been. But again, the reason it wasn't the ultimate in life's disappointment, and this will get back to the whole second act idea is, because this was a second act to something I'll tell you about in a second, but I kind of took the side door into that. I didn't really work my way in the way every comedian that establishes his or her voice first and really, you know, builds an act around a persona, and then you can build a show. Like Seinfeld, a bunch of people have said this. Romano. Yeah, but once you have the
It's crazy. It's bad. If you don't, why can't I? I can't get a show anymore. Bad.
Ray, I'm trying to talk to Elon.
Sorry. So
wait, Ray, are you there? Ray, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I just talk to Elon for a minute?
No. Please. No. I don't want to. Bad. I can't.
Anyway, so once you have the hour and you've built that hour of stand-up and your persona, then you can build a show around that.
Like Chappelle's show. Yeah.
Yeah. Or there's so many examples of comedians. God rest his soul, Bill Cosby. Because his body's alive, but his soul is dead. Been dead for 50 years. But you know, Cosby had an act that talked about the wife and the kids, and then that Cosby.
By the way, guys, I don't know. I wanted to go over this, but we're all over the place. Because let's face it, it's Elon Gold.
It's you.
Elon was also very early on, very successful doing impressions, and he's one of the best. And he is really.
Well, that's
really
nice. I just spoke to Jay Leno the other day, and he's like, you really shouldn't measure success based on, you know, man, what your hits show. Anyway, so here's the point. I didn't have everything invested into this in-laws show. It wasn't my act. It wasn't my point of view.
It wasn't your persona that you had built.
It wasn't my persona. And you really have to build that, and then you take that point of view and persona and make a show around it.
Do you think that having that show taken out of your control, did that make you want to do another one even more?
No. It made me not want to do another one. Made me want to go back to my stand-up roots. And again, this whole in-laws show was the second act. To what, you ask?
What was it, the second act to?
My first act was, from the moment I started doing stand-up at 16, all I wanted to be was Billy Crystal, Martin Short, Eddie Murphy, and like those guys. And I watched SNL and I went, I do impressions. I feel like I could do that. And it was the goal from literally 16 to 23 when I screen tested with Will Ferrell and didn't get it was literally in the final like 8 to 10. And that to me was the biggest disappointment because it's all I wanted. I didn't want a sitcom.
You had nothing else in your mind but SNL at that time.
It was SNL.
About that audition, because I know the story and that's a really great story. And
it's not the best story, but the point.
Well, it's fascinating.
Well, it's like, first of all, it's so many rounds of submitting tapes and then doing stand-up at clubs. Then they call you into Studio 8H at 30 Rock, and you do like 5 to 10 minutes of just characters, original, and then impressions.
How many years had you been doing stand-up at this point?
Like 5, 6.
But how many years had you been doing it like I know, just so the audience knows, like when you were a kid, because you come from a very artistic, creative family, you know, music, art, theater, your parents were very supportive, you know, both your brothers are musicians.
Yeah.
You know, this is an artistic family. Did you come out, was that your thing when you were young? Like, when did you know you were funny? Like, when were you like, oh, I'm.
That's an excellent question, Bonnie.
Thank you.
I was one of those typical, like, sort of shy and introverted, whatever. And I love when.
What?
I know. It's so surprising. And then you hear, like, and I'm not comparing myself, but the extreme is like, Robin Williams was very. And then you meet him, like, Mr. Happy, hello. You know, and it's just like, wait, this guy is not shy. But guess what? I would see him at the Comedy Cellar. And he would sit at the table and just very quietly
like Bill
talk.
Murray, like Bill Murray,
yeah. And then he would go downstairs and there'd be an explosion of, oh, you know. And it was
so that's
just
your
like,
inner self getting to express, but it's
I guess
very
so.
So wait, when were you funny? Tell me, tell the audience.
I think it was like sixth or seventh grade when I started realizing I can do impressions of every teacher, and I would just do them to my friends, and I would just do the teachers, and it got to a point where the other kids would tell the teacher, you know, you could do an impression of you. Oh, really, Mr. Gold? Why don't you come up here? You know, and I would.
By the way, can we just give a little shout out to where Elon is from, y'all?
The Bronx.
The Bronx.
Representing, and then I have a joke in my act. I say, you know. Jews don't really represent like this, like, yo, what's up? It's more like we represent many clients. Anyway, so, I started doing
So you were funny in seventh grade, and you got attention by doing impressions of teachers.
Correct. Attention from girls, attention from guys. Like,
did your parents, did you do it for them to get out of shit? Because I did.
It wasn't to get out of shit. It was just like, I just started noticing, oh, I could do Julia Child, you know, that chef, and I could do this.
Now we get to do,
you know, whatever. But the point is, I just started doing impressions, and I went, this is fun. Then I started, like, sitting in my room by myself just writing jokes, and I was like, this is fun, too. And I was just like, if only I could do this. And then in, like, 10th grade in high school, I did, in front of the entire high school, I'm talking, like, 500 kids. There was a, you know what?
Where'd you go to high school? Give a shout out.
No, I'm too embarrassed.
Oh, what is it? Temple Bethel, Bethelam,
yeah,
Bethel
it's like that. No, it's MTA, Yeshiva University High School. It was an all boys high school. Do you imagine me at an all boys high school?
No wonder why you married the first girl that ever let you kiss her and you're still married.
Literally met her at 15 in high school. And it was like, oh my Ooh. God, are you kidding me? They have those too? I thought it was just us. I didn't know they make that species. And I was just, whatever.
So
that's
you
a whole
killed.
Other
in high school, you killed. There. You got up in front of everybody and you killed.
I got up in front of everybody. It was a Purim spiel, which is a holiday where it's like Halloween. You get dressed up, you do skits, whatever. And I remember writing these two sketches and doing them. And I'm talking, I was like a sophomore. Seniors would pass me by in the hallway. And instead of like throwing something at me, they'd be like, dude, you're funny. And I'm like, you're talking to me, you know, and wow. Again, it was an all boys high school. So I didn't get the girls' attention necessarily, but at least I got the cool guys' attention.
And were your parents supportive of that? Because they're artists.
They were very supportive. My parents, because my dad always had a love of show business, he started the first musical comedy theater society in his city college in New York. And literally, he showed me a playbill. It was like Sid Gold production. He was very into show business. And he goes, look at this cast. And it said, Alfred Pacino. And I'm like, oh, that's Al, but he was, you had him in your little college play. Amazing. And so he always loved the theater. He loved musicals. He's gay. Anyway, my younger brother's gay, but there's a lot of thought and discussion of whether or not dad's gay. Married happily for 55 years. I've almost heard them
Who isn't really? Who isn't at this
who
point?
Who isn't? At this point, we're all gay. The point is, dad very into theater and would always,
yes.
you know, brought us up on Broadway shows. My younger brother, Ari, the great Sir Ari Gold, would start doing jingles. Yes, and he would sing.
And they sing. He's an amazing singer.
Amazing singer. My older brother,
producer, musician.
Yeah, and a composer and a Grammy winning, you know, for Colbert Christmas show because, you know,
so
all
when
the
you
Jews.
Did that, wait, when you did that high school songs. Thing, when you killed at high school, was that the moment that you went, that's it. This is what I'm going to do.
That is the exact moment where I said, I have never felt this level of, you know, feeling rewarded. It was so rewarding. It was so gratifying. And it was so exciting.
So and when then, did you start?
And to answer the thing about my parents. So knowing my parents who were teachers, you know, in the South Bronx, and while they
South Bronx,
that's
South
right,
Bronx,
while they were very into, you know, show business and Broadway and all that, they still just had these jobs as teachers. And then my younger brother Ari, like I said, started doing jingles, and other kids would start going over to my dad, going, "How did you get your son into?" Well, it's a long story, but da da da, he was in a singing contest and da da da. Well, would you represent me too? Cut to my dad is now Broadway Danny Rose representing, you know, kids and adults and young adults in commercials and
so good to know that you came from a family, unlike a lot of us, you know, they were supportive because that is important.
Beyond supportive. I still at Boston University was an economics major, and all through college I was doing stand-up. I would tour up and down the East Coast, go hide each morning, and I would drive all the way up there, do the gig, make $100, whatever, and then come back down. And
I can't believe you were at BU and I was at BC and we met
so
years later. But wait, listen, I just want everyone to know
we
this
could have actually made love. I know we talk a lot about making love.
I don't know.
I think we would have.
Really? I mean, I have this very quick anecdote because I really want you to answer my question. But the funniest story, you guys listening, that when I played Elon's wife on his show, they had an 18-month-old baby, Brandon, who just went to college. Don't get me started. We're old. His wife would come to set and I would joke around because they would write a kissing scene. Now we're talking an 8 o'clock sitcom, so it would literally be a peck. And Elon would not kiss me during rehearsals. And he'd be like,
very respectful.
And then she'd go, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong?
Give her a damn kiss.
And
would
he
you?
Always, so he likes
stick
to
your
front.
Tongue in that shit.
He likes
would
to
you?
Front about all this, but wait.
You want to hear while we're on that topic about kissing.
Okay.
An even better story is because you weren't my first. My first TV wife was the lovely Cynthia Geary from Northern Exposure. And what happened was, this was a terrible sitcom on the WB, and we were doing the pilot, and we had a kissing scene, and I start kissing her, and the director pulls me over to the side, and he said, I just have a question. Are you gay? And I said, no, why? No, I'm married and a lovely wife. And I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that, but you refuse to like kiss her. And I'm like, no, I'm just trying to be respectful. I think if I like stuck my tongue down her mouth, she would like smack me or, you know, in 30 years, I predicted the Me Too movement. And I'd
be
like,
you did this with me every week. And then I would purposefully run and kiss you, and it's like a little girl in nursery school that Elon would go, yeah, get away from me. So guys, just so you know, we have this bit that we talk about, you know, fucking and all that.
Right.
He literally wouldn't come near me.
I wouldn't come anywhere. I did one time by accident come near you.
Where was I?
It's a double entendre.
All right, listen to me. I want to go back to when you did the stand-up. Okay, so you decide, you go, this is it. What was your very first professional stand-up moment? First time you went on stage, paid, whether it was $20 in the city.
I followed Adam Sandler at the comic strip, and it was open mic night, and it was like 1987. And this guy was like, everyone was awful. Everyone. Because open mic night, it's people literally doing it for the first time. And almost no one is good the first time, except me. But anyway, and the only reason I was good is because I was doing impressions. So
right.
It's very
easy. And that's
what
I want people to know. You do amazing impressions, and that's when I knew you. But you,
right.
You know, you
and all
of
the impressions I did was impressions of other comedians with my own material in their voice. So I would do like Howie Mandel. All right, okay, what? Like, and I would write jokes, and I just told Howie this on my show that the jokes would be in his vein. I go, I bet you would have loved the jokes. Like one of the jokes was, okay, all right, A E I O U I U A O E. I just moved my vowels, and he's like, that is exactly the kind of freaking stupid poop joke that I would have done. So I would write jokes and that, you know, Gilbert Gottfried, oh, stop it, please. I can't. Anyway, and all these comedians I would do, Dice and Bobcat Goldthwait. Hi, thank you very much. Ah! Nobody knows these people anymore. But the point is, when I was starting out, these were the hippest, hottest comedians of the day.
Wait,
some
I
people
cut
didn't
you
even
off.
Know.
That
yeah.
open. I'm sorry, I cut you off. That open mic night, the very first time you did it, you followed Sandler.
Yeah.
The very first time, what happened? What happened
everyone
in your
is
brain?
Bombing. Everyone is bombing, and then they say, and I, by the way, at that point, seeing one after the other, just tanking, just eating it, I turn to my brother and our friend Dave Baum, and I say, guys, if this doesn't work, if I don't do well, if this is humiliating, I'm never doing this again. Just want you to know that
you
right now.
That?
Humiliation of just dying on stage. I said that. And Sandler goes up and they introduced him. He was a nobody before SNL, before everything, but he was a regular at the comic strip. It was like, now, instead of all these open micers, our next guest is a regular here at the comic strip, one of our past, you know, regular. Please welcome Adam Sandler. He comes on, nobody knows him, and he is just funny. He is genuinely funny with great jokes, amazing material, and people are laughing. So I'm like, oh, okay, maybe because I also prepared actual good jokes and I'm going to do impressions. Maybe I won't bomb like the other eight guys before Sandler. So Sandler, clear, you know, defibrillator to just wake them up. And Sandler was that defibrillator. Then I go on. And again, only because I did impressions and partly for beginner's luck's sake, I killed. Like, I literally thought to myself, okay, I'm now a comedian. Not only am I a comedian, I'm a famous comedian because 48 people just went nuts. And I just played the comic strip. You literally think to yourself, that's it. That's all I got to do. That's it. I'll never forget when I opened for Barry Sobel at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco, having only done stand-up like for 2 years. And I got an MTV spot on this thing, the show called Half Hour Comedy Hour, which, by the way, if you look at the list of people who booked that show, it's literally Chris Rock, Adam Sandler, David Spade, Damon Wayans, Hicks, Dennis Leary, Drew Carey. I can't even, it's every, Ray Romano, it's everyone that then became gigantic and me.
So you booked that.
So I do that show and I get to audition, so I get a call to do the radio, you know, this huge hall, Great American Music Hall. And I'll never forget, this guy's manager, the headliner's manager comes over to me and he goes, well, now you're doing stand-up, you just gotta, you know, hit the road and maybe like in 10 years, things will really start cooking. And I'm like,
that's it?
Hit the road, 10 years? Hit the road, 10 years? No, I said the opposite. I went, I'm huge. I've been doing this 2 years. I just played to 400 people. What do you mean? I had no concept. You had to put years of work, years and years and years of work. So can I stop for a new bit I'm working on? Can I stop for a new bit I'm working on?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I said the word work, and I'm working on this bit that comedians don't really work, okay? You can get paid for something. That doesn't make it work. You could also get paid for sex. Is that work, though, necessarily, right? I mean, think about, like, right? Are you with me?
Yeah, sometimes it's work. Depends.
And
on
yet, and yet they have the nerve to call it sex worker. They have the nerve. I'm not an idiot. I don't call myself a joke worker. And by the way, even my jokes don't work. So
that's true.
Yeah, thank you.
Listen, I gotta ask you though.
Go ahead.
So cut to from all this. So now you start doing it. So you go to SNL, right?
I go to SNL. Will Ferrell.
That's your it. You're like, I'm gonna
this
get
is
this.
It. Lorne Michaels passes me in the hallway and goes, very funny. I go to a payphone. Remember those? And I literally call Sasha and my best friend Schiffer. And I'm like, I think I got it. Lauren just said I was funny. I totally killed it. And then just like.
And then you didn't get it.
Then that was the worst call.
Do you think that was a defining moment as far as like the second act theme that you were so devastated and you were just like, what the fuck do I do now?
100%. And it was also, I started steering away from impressions because to me, I still to this day don't consider myself in any way an impressionist. I'm a comedian who does impressions.
No, I don't think you're an impressionist. I think you're just damn good at it.
Thank you. Right. So it's like a little God-given gift that I, you know, it's innate. It's inborn. I take no credit for it, but I'm certainly not an impressionist. I don't want to be. I don't want to be Fred Travellina and work Vegas the rest of my life.
What do you think you do? Well, let me ask you what, because I know you for almost 20 years and I'm one of your biggest fans. What do you think is something in your bag of tricks that you want to do and you have not done yet? Like what, because we've all had, you've had a million second acts. We could talk for hours. What's something right now off the top of your head that you haven't done you want to do?
Host a show like the Emmys.
You would be so fucking
because
amazing.
I don't want to brag, but I have hosted the Chabad Telethon.
Listen, he's huge in Tel Aviv. You know
I'm
what I mean?
Huge. I can't walk the streets of Jerusalem. But the point is, I love that. And again, my heroes, guys like Billy Crystal, you know, doing sketch comedy. He also did a sitcom, then hosting the Oscars, like all that stuff, doing movies. I'd love to do a really good, juicy, meaty part in a movie. But
you could, by the way, you're also a great actor. But you know what I was talking about you trying to prep for this interview, not as a friend. I said, you always inspire me, like, because, you know, I get down. I have depression. I'm open about it, you know. I've had moments of sabotage. How have you managed with all the years and being a comedian, I mean, it is the most.
I think it's the big.
How do you always stay so positive and happy and you've never given up?
I was literally having the thought. It's interesting that you asked this, because having that thought while running this morning, I think it's the big five. And literally had this thought this morning, although I've always thought about these things, putting it into five, a category of five. These are the things that are most important to me. This is my mantra. This is how I live my life. And it just goes like this: God, family, community, comedy, colostomy. And the last one is because the last one represents health.
I thought I was almost tearing up.
The last one represents health. I just don't ever want a colostomy bag.
You know what?
If I could be healthy enough to not have a bag of poop attached to my pants, then I will be happy. But those things of God and family, that's what keeps you grounded. Keeps
that what goes back to what I said, though, about why I've always admired you and why, remember, I wanted you to find me a nice Jewish guy after I met you, because the concept of family, I didn't grow up with that. My dad wasn't around. I grew up the opposite of what you
have. And because I don't have clinical or chemical depression, but believe me, I can get depressed. When I do go to the dark places, writing is such a, that's so right. Just writing makes me so happy when something good happens. I get more depressed when it's shit. But like writing but when you get down, you just know I have kids and I got to take care of them. I just can't stay down for long. And again, it's not a chemical imbalance, so I can control it. I can will my way out of it. Right. There's nothing a depressed person wants to hear more. Doesn't want to hear more than.
Yeah, no.
Can't you just pick yourself up? No, I can't. No. But I can, thankfully. And I think about what matters and I have faith in God and in myself, by the way, have faith in yourself too.
What would you tell right now struggling comedians listening to this when they've gotten rejected from SNL, like in-laws canceled, but they don't have the family and the wife that you have? What would so down on themselves. What would you tell them?
I'm not sure what I would tell them, but I will say this. I'm very thankful that I'm a comedian and an actor, and I've always felt badly for people like you who are mostly, because you're other things like a musician and a singer, but mostly an actor. If I was mostly an actor and all I did was get rejected every single day, I don't know what I would do. But do you know that every day I would audition and they would call me, they hated you, or a test, you think the other guy got it. Every day, instead of going down, I'd work on my act, go to a club and at night kill and be like, they're just wrong. They don't see it. The audience sees it, but I can do this and I could be funny. You know, a casting director could say, he wasn't funny. Oh, but really? Because a few hundred people just told me I was.
You're writing that, and I'm finally doing this after 25 years. I'm trying to create, because that's what got me in my worst place. When I hit rock bottom, which the show came from, it was this rejection. There was just one too many, Code Black. And I just went into such a dark place. And it was like, it's because I was a model first, judged on my looks. I have never been in charge of my own content.
Yep.
It's
not just rejection that we all face and everyone faces rejection. Yeah. It's for me, I wasn't just rejected. I was literally, because I had two sitcoms in a row, because then I did another one with Pam Anderson and Steve Levitan before he created Modern Family. He created the show called Stacked on Fox. Once those back to back.
It was weird that you cast Pam Anderson in Stacked, not me.
I didn't cast anyone. I was cast as an actor.
No, just not me. It's bizarre.
I was cast as an actor myself, girlfriend.
I'm kidding.
And once that happened, I was put into show business prison. So it wasn't just rejection. I couldn't even get the auditions. Barely. You know what I always said? I said it felt like I was in show business prison with conjugal visits, because rarely they would let me go. Oh, and we'll give you a guest star on The Mentalist, or you get a 3-episode arc on Bones because I auditioned and whatever. Right. They would let me audition. These were conjugal visits. Every 2 years, they'd let me out for another something. But I was in prison. I couldn't get arrested.
And then you had 1,500 kids. So then you have to keep working.
Then act 7 or 8 was, hey, you know what I'm really good at and is very important to me, because in comedy, you have to talk about what's important to you, what, you know, yes. and what you care about. And I care about, again, faith and Judaism and my people. So I started developing all this material about our customs and rituals and traditions, and not making fun, but poking fun. And I developed this entire new Jewish act. And then there's this circuit of Jewish fundraisers and all these Jewish gigs. And I became the king of the Jews, no offense to Jesus. But I am the modern day king of the Jews.
Whoa. Jesus, we'll talk later, go.
He was the king of the Jews.
Listen.
I am
I'll have a talk with him. I have a dialogue. I went to Catholic school. I could just call him.
You should have a dialogue with Jesus.
Anyway, you know what? You're so right, Elon. Think about that. Anyone listening, I really have always envied that about my friends like you that are writers and comedians, that I look back and I wish I had done this earlier, created my own voice.
Yes.
And not just been.
You should have done this earlier.
Your friend, because an actress for hire.
Yes, because you can't just rely on the business or on getting parts or whatever. You have to, sometimes it's self-generated. You just have to choose your own adventure. And I went, this Jewish thing is really rewarding. And it was paying the mortgage while I'm in show business jail. I was in what I call shul business. Shul means synagogue, temple. I was in shul business. Show business had rejected me. Shul business was, I was playing synagogues.
You're telling the audience, you got to create your own second act.
Correct. And your own fifth and sixth and eighth and tenth. And right now, it's literally going on Instagram and doing a daily show.
Well, what you did, My Funny Quarantine,
yeah.
Awesome. You did it right away, like day one. You were on day Instagram one. Live, boom. Okay, how am I going to create? And I'm sitting there going depressed, and I'm looking at all my friends like you guys go. And Dave was like, well, you have this idea for the podcast. What the fuck are you doing? Let's do it.
Right.
Like, create.
Right.
Because we are creative.
Yes. You have to create. You can't. If stages are closed,
yeah,
and clubs are closed, and any venues are closed, well, what you have to create the stage.
So are all clubs closed right now?
Everything is closed. Everything is on Zoom. Literally 2 nights ago at 3:20 in the morning, I did a Zoom gig to Australia because there it was like whatever, 7 p.m. And by the way, my opening joke was, oh my God, it's exhausting. It's 3:30 in the morning for me. I never thought that I could Zoom to Australia and get jet lag. And by the way, and as much as
you're
I was
killing in Long Beach right now, by the way,
thank you. And as much as I was proud of that joke, all I did after the Zoom gig ended, I went, should I have said instead of, I didn't know you could Zoom to Australia and get jet lag. Should I have worded it? I didn't know you could get jet lagged Zooming to Australia. What's the better version? Is it ending on Australia?
No, what you said was better. But again, that's even a little side note. The people don't realize that people like us, I mean, you more than me because you write, that it never ends. Like whether it's your second act, your 40th act, you still go to bed at night. I have nightmares about what I should have said, or I left a room. Was I, because I don't know if you know this, I talk a lot sometimes, maybe a little bit.
No.
Sometimes a little bit.
Not true. Don't listen to people who say that, but let me speak for just a minute in this hour.
A little bit you did.
A little bit you did, Tommy.
A little bit. You interrupted him.
What's your point, Bonnie Somerville?
They don't realize, like, you go to bed at night, second guessing, it never ends.
Right.
But that's also, it's a blessing and a curse, right? It's a blessing and a curse, because I go to bed at night going, and that's part of this whole new world we live in. Like, you're killing it because you're a comedian. You're doing these Zooms. Elon, I'm doing these self-tapes, and you know me. I'm not in the room. So part of my thing is my shtick in the room.
Of
and I'm like,
course.
I know, Elon.
You are dynamite in the room. You walk into a room, and it's not just heads turned because you're gorgeous. It's your charisma. Literally a chemistry thing.
Thank you.
You don't have that when you're putting yourself on tape. No. Everyone on tape looks like a softcore porn actor. Everyone. And it's the worst thing. I've never booked off of tape.
Honey, do you want me to look like a softcore porn actor? Yeah, baby. All right, listen. I want to talk to you for hours, but I got
to... We'll do a part two in like a year when I'm... When we're still in quarantine.
We're doing part two, but I'm going to ask you 5 questions to wrap up our interview. Okay. If in-laws got picked up and had been on for the past 15 years, where would our characters be today? I was a nurse. You were a chef. Mm-hmm. Dennis had just retired and Gene was a real estate agent. Where would we be today?
I would have had a restaurant that shut down and you would have died of COVID. What else you got?
Okay. What is the best and the worst story that you have of when you've done your impressions to the actual person's face?
Oh,
the
you should best... have asked me this when we had more time. We've already exceeded our hour. Our time's up.
No, you could.
Did I mention I have to go to Jeff Garland's house to film something with him right now?
Oh, wow. All right.
Let me just answer that quickly.
The best time, the worst time.
Okay. Doing Howard Stern for Howard Stern. Well, this is very exciting. Let me tell you something, Robin. This Elon Gold, he really nails me. he loved it. And just knowing that I did these sketches on MTV
I'm
with
so
me.
So turned on right now. I'm really I'm a little turned on.
I know you love Howard. Who doesn't? But I asked Dave Chappelle to be Robin, and we did these sketches on MTV, and Howard saw it. And I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest. And then there's a very long Charles Grodin story about me doing him on the lips with Conan. Robert Smigley used to always do those lips of like Bill Clinton, Bob Dole. They asked me to do Charles Grodin, and I knew that Charles Grodin didn't want to see the impression from earlier. I heard he does. I don't want to be self-conscious. I don't want to see an impression of myself. Can I ask you not to do the impression of me? But anyway, he did. He saw it because they forced him to, and he refused to sit down when he came out on the Conan O'Brien show. He went, I was ambushed. I really don't appreciate it. Do I sound like that? I don't really sound like that. Do I sound like that? So that was a bad negative experience.
Okay. Growing up in New York, I know you've been out here a long time, but what do you miss the most as a fellow New Yorker? Like, what do you miss the most of living there?
The club scene, going, literally doing four spots a night, going from club to club to club to club. And it's just like, wow, you could work on stuff in the cab or the car on the way from one club and then you rework a joke. I do miss that. The reason I don't miss New York is because I spend every summer in New York. Except this one, obviously. So I don't miss New York because I feel like I still live there part of the year.
And also tell the newbies.
Because my parents and in-laws are still in New York. So we take the kids and everybody spends summers there. Yeah.
Tell the newbies, though, which I found out just through being friends with you and other stand-ups, when you would come into the city and do all those nights, what was the average paycheck you made after those nights? Was it like $15 or 20?
It was the cab fare. It was literally $20 a spot. Sometimes it was 25. I think now it's up to 40.
All right, one more question. Yeah. Who is your absolute favorite actress on television ever in the history of the world?
On television. and just actresses, not actors.
Just in general. Just in general.
Like just actresses?
Yeah, just an actress, favorite actress.
Okay. Amanda Peet.
You are a fucking asshole.
You are a piece of shit. Because every time Bonnie's very threatened by Amanda because I did one movie where she played my wife and Bonnie's like, you have another wife now? So Bonnie, I did that. It's always been you.
We're done.
I love you. I admire you. You're the best. You're the funniest. You killed at my roast. You're talented. You're sweet. You're musically gifted.
I love you.
You're actively, what's the word? Actorly gifted.
I'm gifted in a lot of ways, but I love you and
I love you in every way.
I want to do this again because I just could talk to you for hours. Tell everyone where they can
find
you.
We've scratched the surface and my balls, which you can't see when I scratch my balls on the Zoom, right?
That's
the thing about Zoom. I'm literally scratching my balls and you cannot see.
Listen, I got balls over here to the left of me. I got balls everywhere. Balls and balls.
I love when the Brooklyn Bonnie comes. I got balls everywhere.
Listen, I got bigger balls than the two guys in this room right now.
Right.
Tell everybody where to find you, my darling. Tell everybody where to find you right now.
I got a special on Amazon Prime. I'm just go to YouTube. I have all these clips, and I have a show on Instagram. Follow me at Elon Gold, ELONGOLD. I'm very proud of that special called Chosen and Taken, and little parts and things and stuff. And I was on In-Laws. Did I mention that?
And also, you were the best guy in the whole show of Fauda. You were the best. You were the best. Oh, you weren't in Fauda. No.
That hurts. I just told you I've been in show business jail and I'm trying to claw my way out. I am developing a new TV show, so let's hope that the show business gods let me back in.
Is there a part for me or no? I'm too old.
We cast Amanda already.
You know what? You're an asshole. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom, everybody.
I love you.
Love
bye.
You.
Bye. Bye-bye. Still laughing after that interview. I don't think He is really one of the funniest people I've ever met. Honestly, he makes me laugh so hard. And you know what's great about Elon? He's so supportive of other people being funny. He's always been that guy. He's so supportive. He loves making people laugh, but he loves supporting other people. And I hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed doing it. And I hope you got some inspiration there about, you know, there's another person so many times having to get back up, reinvent himself, such a positive person. So much insight there about staying positive and family and faith and love and how do you just keep going. And I love him. Hope you love that. Please don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This is Second Act on the Believe Podcast Network. Tell all your friends. Follow me on social media at secondact_pod or me, Bonz Somerville, on Instagram. And follow Elon at Elon Gold on Twitter and Elon Gold on Instagram. And if you've never seen him do stand-up, check into his live Instagram stories he's doing during the quarantine. He's just awesome, and he's hilarious, and he'll make you feel good, even if you're in the worst mood ever. Shabbat shalom, everybody. I hope you all have a great day, great weekend, great morning, wherever you're listening to this. And I cannot wait to bring you my next guest because he's also awesome, and it's just going to get better and better. So thank you so much. And don't forget to send me those messages. I want to hear from you guys. Okay, bye.